Editor-in-Chief is brought to you by Authority Rainmaker. You know, it's not your typical online marketing conference. The event is a carefully designed live educational experience that presents a complete and effective online marketing strategy to help you immediately accelerate your business. Don't miss the opportunity to see Dan Pink, Sally Hogshead, punk legend Henry Rollins, and many other incredible speakers live. Not to mention the most important part, building real-world relationships with other attendees. Authority Rainmaker is a unique experience because you finally get the chance to connect with other people who understand what you love to do, because they love it too. So get all the details right now at rainmaker.fm/event, and we will look forward to seeing you in Denver, Colorado this May. Check out rainmaker.fm/event. On the first episode of Editor in Chief, I talked about how we don't like our creations altered and we don't like mistakes pointed out. Writers might be nervous about working with editors. Even though it's not fun to have your mistakes pointed out and a bit of a blow to your ego, an editor is actually your behind-the-scenes ally. Because it's better to have mistakes pointed out and corrected before your writing is released to the general public. It's a safety net. But what if an editor regards a section of text as a mistake and the writer regards that same section as an integral part of his work of art? Right before we launched Rainmaker FM, I got the chance to talk to my coworker, Copyblogger Media's chief content writer, Damian Farnworth, about the fragile nature of writer-editor relationships. Let's now listen to our conversation. Damian, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me on the show, Stephanie. I am so excited.
I'm so excited that we're talking because, you know, I nicknamed you Vitamin D, and we have a meeting later, a work meeting later, but I get an extra dose of vitamin D today.
That's great. I love that. Thank
good.
You.
It's good for my health. So.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. That's good. That's completely new to me. I've never heard that before, but I love it. So
no,
that's awesome.
No one has nicknamed
you
that?
No. Never.
Yay. Well, I'm happy that I get to share that fun little bond with you. So thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. So it's been a good day. It's been getting some good projects done and talking to a few people and moving along. So it's especially as we're coming like over the hump of getting this podcast network off the ground. I had a lot of work yesterday that I got done by 5 o'clock what I did. And so sort of taking a little breather today, but I'm still, you know, working, but I'm just not working nearly as hard. But so this is a nice little treat to go to do today. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, thank you for taking the time. Yeah, we are coming to the end of the hump of the launch. And I know that workflow thing too, because sometimes when you're in it, you just have to ride the momentum and you're like, I'm not tired yet, even though I should be, but I just have to keep going. And then, you know, you catch up later when all of that, you know, you made that big push. And yeah, I know I have the same thing too with, because we're all kind of, you know, the learning curve of all of the new podcast stuff, we're incorporating it into our schedules and everything and figuring out, you know, the best way, the best time and to do what we need.
Yeah. I don't know if you're like me though, but like, you know, I get anxious when I have to like, especially new technology, because I have this fear like it's always just going to blow up on me. And so yeah, but I like learning things, and I also know just from experience that, you know, that it's always going to be, you know, sort of trench warfare, just, you know, getting things off the ground. But once you get through that part, that's like you understand it. You have a new skill you've just developed, and you can go and turn around and help other people with that particular skill. So I kind of, that's how I sort of justify going through that hard work of figuring all that stuff out and in a new territory to me. Because I'm, you know, I'm a writer. I like to sit behind my laptop and, you know, create words on the screen versus actually talking to people. So that in itself, I have to learn how to do that better too. So, but I, you know, it's one of those things of just helping. I think it's another life skill, and it's another way of just hone the ultimate craft of being able to communicate better.
Definitely. It really is a learning experience because, and also, yeah, I have the same exact feeling, like you said, it kind of takes experience to get to the point where you're doing something new and you don't completely freak out because you can see the end result. Like when everything is new to you, then I guess I'm going back to if, when you're younger and you just haven't, you know, had a lot of life experience, work experience, you know, you don't know that there's an end point yet where everything will be fine and you will be able to, you know, almost be an expert on what you've learned at the end and it won't be so bad. Because that's where I'm thinking now, where, you know, with all of the new technology and the new stuff that I've been learning too, I keep thinking, okay, one day this will all be second nature to me and I won't have to, you know, look through every single step. Did I do that right? Did I do that right? And
Well, it's that repetition, right? It's that repetition of doing it and going through it. And then eventually it won't be so overwhelming and it will, like you said, it will be second nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I am enjoying the process, but it definitely, you know, it puts you a little bit on edge. And so if you can have that bigger perspective of, okay, I'm just going to do this, like, it's the most natural, normal thing to me. It's just part of my workflow then, you know, so that's where I'm looking.
So is this your first episode then?
This is my third episode.
Oh, okay. Third episode. Great.
Mm-hmm. We've had a little build up to this, to this interview. But what I was going to say is,
so did you interview two people before this?
I didn't. The last two were monologues.
Oh, great. Looking forward to that. That'll be nice.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I'm doing both for this podcast.
So to give you
a little background of kind of my overall, I guess, theme of what we're doing. The reason why I'm doing both is because I'm really big on this editor-in-chief model or mindset, which is to kind of break it down a little bit.
Yes.
In the role of an editor-in-chief, you have to think big picture and you have to think very detail-oriented.
It's good.
In order to do your job, you're looking 3 months down the line, but you're also looking at what needs to happen tomorrow and you're making sure it's the best it can be. So the podcast is mimicking that a little bit in style, where I'm having conversations with you about editing and writing, and then I'm doing other monologues where I break down specific editing topics.
Oh, that's neat. Okay, yeah. That's neat. I like that. That's a great philosophy. So is there... would you give up one of those, or is it because both of those roles are in the job that you like being the editor in chief?
I like both of those roles. Yeah, that is what I think is so special about the job and other people who have roles like that. And I actually am making the argument that anyone who does create media online should assume this editor in chief mindset in order to... and actually, I have so much to ask you about your own writing and your own experience, but I do make a case for that being a focused mindset to have. But I really do like both. It's part of my personality. I don't think I trained myself to have a job like that. I'm just very, I like to think ahead, but then you also have to balance that with the details of the day-to-day and...
Yeah. Well, I think that's a special gift because I would give up the details any day because I am the big, you know, the big thinker, the visionary, and the routine and the minute bore me and put me to sleep and irritate the daylights out of me. I know, you know, there are certain things about what I do. I have to pay attention to the details, right? But for the most part, if that was my part of my daily sort of routine, I'd shoot myself.
Well, that is why editors and writers balance each other. And
I agree.
And it's, so we work together. You are Copy Blogger's chief copywriter, and I edit copyblogger.com, the blog there. Mm-hmm. And so we do balance each other out. But I do think writer and editor relationships are very delicate. They can be, and we sound like we're getting along. We do get along. That's not always the case. And we can talk more about that later of why that is a very, like I said, delicate relationship. But I found out something recently that I am very interested in asking you about. When I was listening to your other podcast, well, we can talk about your new podcast. It's called Rough Draft, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Very cool. So what I meant by other podcast is the podcast that you have been doing with Jared, the lead. Mm-hmm. And so I found out that for a previous job that you had, mm-hmm. you were actually a managing editor and you had editors working below you and proofreaders as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously now you work for Copyblogger and you're a writer. And like we said, you don't work day in and day out with the editing because that's other people's jobs in our company. I would love to hear more about that experience and how that has influenced your work now, as you know, since you get to live in the space of a writer and if you are more comfortable being a writer.
So yeah, I loved that time that I spent as a managing editor because I got the opportunity to mentor, because I had a stable of six writers and I think it was three proofreaders who were underneath me. And so the proofreaders were like my saviors in the sense that they did the details, right? They took care of the sort of grunt work, you know, or the Lord's work in that sense. And so like my vision and goal for that group of people, and they were really just kind of, I discovered about myself that I loved to teach and I loved to sort of just like sort of grow people up as writers. Cause one of the very first things I thought about, like I was put in that position that I was like, I have three proofreaders and six writers. If I was in their positions, I would want to be in 2 years, like the best darn writer I could be as a writer. And then if I was a proofreader, I would want to sort of come up in the ranks and become a writer. And so I just asked them, I was like, do you want to be better writers? And do you proofreaders eventually want to be writers? And they all were like, yeah, great. So I sort of set this goal of like, okay, so in 2 years, I want to develop you guys so the writers could walk out of the door here if they wanted to and go work anywhere that they wanted, go work for National Geographic, work for Vanity Fair. And the proofreaders come up behind them and take their place, and then just make it like a machine, you know, sort of just a training house in that sense. And I loved the time that I spent in the ability to do that. And I did that sort of thing through one-on-ones with each one, you know, just from critiques of their actual physical work, and then like weekly workshops that I had with them. But the other side that I really loved was the long-range planning, because this was a print magazine that I was doing, so we were about 6 months out from print. Mm-hmm. So I had to think 6 months out, and I had to coordinate with other departments on, you know, products, on events, and make sure that we were all aligned, because we also, there was a radio division, there was a television division. So I had to make sure like the radio shows and TV shows that were going out in November, that we were putting out a magazine in November that matched what the message they were saying. So there was a lot of that and a lot of coordination. So I really love that. But it did take me out of the writing role. And I'm at heart, I love to write, and it is probably the place that I'm most comfortable and that I love to be in, and I enjoy it. And so even in that position as a managing editor, I had to work really hard to make sure I was doing some writing. Like, you know, we actually created a column so I could write monthly for that and have something to do. But I do live comfortably in the role of writer. I like it. But again, I also like the sort of collaboration. I like the fact, because I realized too that this is really a team effort. Like, you know, I could write something, but it's not going to get up on our blog unless it gets, you know, unless it gets edited, unless it gets approved, unless it gets reviewed, unless it gets, you know, designed, and then it actually gets published on there. So it's a team effort. I like the idea of writing, and I'm very comfortable in that role.
Definitely. So that experience to me seems incredibly valuable for moving your writing career forward, because you're not just an isolated writer in a sense without, you know, I don't want to say directionless, because not every isolated writer is directionless, but you got a sense of kind of the bigger production picture and how you could fit
right.
what you wanted to do in that role. Like you said, you created a column so you were able to write, but you saw the bigger picture. It wasn't mm-hmm. just, you know, you producing just content on your own and hoping something would happen. Because that is, did you just work online for yourself after that? Was that the next step?
Yeah, the next step was the copybot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, working for myself, for close to 2 years as a writer, as, you know, being hired to write, blog posts, write sales letters, write email, autoresponder series, PDF, white papers. I did a great series, it was an email series for a company called the Emerging Trains, who were selling raw undeveloped land out in Latin America. So it was a lot of that sort of writing.
So on the copybot, I just realized yesterday when I was making notes that copybot sounds like copy blogger. It was a completely different thing in my head before yesterday.
That's great. That name actually, so that name came from my daughter, because we sat down when I knew that I was working for myself, I knew that I had to start building an online presence. And so I was like, okay, so I needed a name for my website, and it needs to be short and needs to be about copy in some sense. And so we went through just a lot of different, with my son and my daughter, and my wife, and my daughter picked the winning one, would be Copybot. So.
I know. I love it. I mean, it really pops or something. It's just kind of.
I love it when people ask me, like, what is a copybot? Like, that's me. That's all you need to know.
I really like it, but I didn't even realize, like, because it kind of has that pop or that just kind of catchiness, even though copy and then B is like copy blogger, I didn't even like. It stands on its own without being like, oh, that sounds like, at least for me, I don't know, maybe yeah. I just didn't realize how similar it was.
Well, here's sort of a branding naming lesson for people to be in. The one thing, the challenge with that name, the copybot, mm-hmm. is that copybot is something that's part of Second Life, which is that online simulation type thing. If you look it up, because if you type in copybot, something about Second Life will come up. So I compete with that though. So that's something to keep in mind. And I didn't realize it until I actually had the website and was kind of down the road and was, because when you first start off, you don't have any recognition in the search engines or anything like that. So you're not really Googling your mm-hmm. your brand name. But once I did, I was like, oh no. So
I know that does, because you can't think of everything when you're first right. starting out too. I mean, I've had that experience too. Like, why did I do, I had no idea that that was going to be the consequence of mm-hmm. of that. But I mean, you have to do it anyways, because if you try to get everything perfect, you're just not going to start.
Right.
So those are just things you deal with.
I don't know if you saw this too, but so my tagline, which is at the bottom of the site, is, and this is why I used Copybot too, is it's essential web writing advice from a high-strung human. Mm-hmm. And, the idea being, bot is sort of like a machine. So copy machine, I'm a machine.
Yeah, no, I did. I got that theme. Yeah, I like that. I like that
okay.
tagline.
Good.
On the copybot, I believe you have an article. I know we talk about this on Copyblogger too, but I think if I'm not mistaken, that it originally came from something that you were talking about on the copybot, and that is the plight of the average blogger.
Mm-hmm.
Did that started or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was a conversation that started, I guess, 2 years ago, I want to say, really on Google Plus, that I was having with a gentleman named Mike Elgin, who is probably one of the most visible people on Google Plus and is probably one of the most visible advocates of Google Plus. And he and I were just discussing, we were debating, what is the average plight of a blogger? And he was saying it was, visibility and being in obscurity, which I agree with. But mm-hmm. and ultimately what I came down to was that, okay, yeah, that's true. But it's also true is that the real plight, I think, what it boils down to is that bloggers just don't know how to make a living online. Like, they build the audience, they get the attention, but they come to a point like, I want to keep on doing this. How do I monetize this? So it was an idea that started there, and I think I wrote about it on Copybot, and then just over time, I eventually wrote an article about Copyblogger. So that's an interesting question because it just you sort of see that where the idea germinated and how it kind of evolved over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is. I mean, for me, going back to the editor-in-chief mindset, that is my constant theme. The reason why I thought of that was kind of using, I guess, your own experience as a case study of sorts, and also and tying that into the two struggles of the average blogger, right? You first have, how am I going to break through and get anyone to pay attention to all this content that I'm producing, to provide value and show people that I'm providing value? And then once you get that traction and you start and you have people paying attention to you, your next obstacle is how do I make a living doing this?
Right.
You know, I have the eyeballs on me. I'm providing value. People like what I do, but it's not like, okay, then everything comes easily to you. You still have to think very strategically of how you monetize all of the work that you've done before. You get over one hurdle and then you still have another hurdle.
Which is hard too, because I think I don't naturally go, okay, so how do I monetize this? How do I make this work?
Mm-hmm. And it does go back to that, you know, thinking long term and then balancing the day to day.
Right.
Where, you know, for my editor-in-chief model, to me, it's something that positions you to produce content in a meaningful, focused way so that you make something special for your audience, and that audience comes to know you as the resource. And then you kind of have to tap into, like, okay, I'm a resource for these people. What can I provide for them in, you know, now that you've given away all this stuff for free through your content, what is your next move? But to get to that point, to me, it does go back to just having, in terms of your work, I would say the first step is an evaluation of all the content that you produce.
Right.
We talk about content strategy. You just wrote a post about 13 questions that you can use to get your content strategy rolling. So the evaluation, to me, takes you out of the
day-to-day stuff, right?
Yeah. I'll take a step back and say that I think it's amazing if you're a prolific writer and you can just produce content day and night and just pump it out. You know, I'm not like that because I'm approaching content from an editor's perspective. But I mean, if you're a prolific writer and can just produce like crazy, that is amazing to me. However, the evaluation stage comes in, I feel like, because you don't want to waste your time. You have to have a focus on, okay, I'm able to produce all this content, but what am I really trying to achieve with it?
Exactly, because I think like there's this young man that I'm mentoring, and his problem is like he shared with me all this content that he's creating, all these websites that he has, and you know, and it's like that's a problem because you're not doing anything well. It's sort of, you know, you have all of these ideas sort of rolling, but they're not substantial or useful ideas because you can't focus on eight different things. And, you know, sometimes I hear people talk about, like, if you jump into the authority community forums, you know, people say, well, I'm writing about this, this, this. And you're like, okay, you need to pick two of those and just focus on that, you know? And but I think that's natural though, because we have a lot of interest, and especially in starting a blog, part of it is just, you know, to get started. Like, you know, if you, you know, you need a sort of a strategy, but if it helps us to get in there and start rolling and then stop and say, okay, so what is working and what is not working? And then you can start sort of focusing and evolving. Like I tell people all the time is like, listen, like your tagline, your sort of mission, it's going to evolve over time, right? Because as you just work, as you see what's working, as you find out things that you like and you don't like, you'll start to, you know, trim what you're going and sort of course correct as you're heading down that path. But I mean, we won't have anything fixed, but like what you're saying though, to being strategic about it is very helpful because you can avoid sort of a lot of those dead ends that you come to, or pinning yourself into a corner and you're like, okay, I don't know how to get out of here. I just need to start from scratch.
Right. And of course you do have to just get started, and then, you know, and then you can reevaluate. It's so hard because, you know, advice can seem a little bit contradictory. Did I make that up? And it's because you want to be focused, but then it's like, well, if you don't have anything to work with, you know, how can I don't? Yeah, your strategy needs to come from evaluating what you've been doing so far and what's working and what isn't working.
Right. I mean, at some point you need to decide. Yeah. I remember Chris Brogan. I remember following him a long, long time ago in his blog, the one that he has now. His blog actually, I mean, he had posts on there about like how, what he just did at the gym. Mm-hmm. And then he had stuff about like, you know, some business advice. And then he had some advice about, you know, yoga and then eating rice and stuff. And he was all over the map, you know, but he was just trying to build that presence. And that's part of who he is. But eventually he just started to narrow his focus until it was very kind of, he developed that sort of sense of the direction he needed to go and, you know, and honed that voice that he had.
Mm-hmm. You dive in and then you fine tune as you go. I think creating that awareness after you've been producing some content and you see, you know, your body of work, auditing your body of work.
Right.
We've been talking about content audits a lot too. And then going back and, you know, seeing what you should maybe be focused on going forward. So after that evaluation process, I mean, the second kind of editor-in-chief mindset, I would say, is the critical examination of the actual each piece of content that you're producing. Because to me, again, it's, you know, creating something just really special is what, over time, is what attracts a very specific audience to you. And, you know, those people are going to be loyal to you and, you know, want to find out everything that you're doing. So they subscribe and, you know, they don't want to lose touch with anything you're producing because it is valuable to them.
Right.
You know, really just fine tuning in a way where you're producing content in a way that your audience thinks, wow, this person gets me. And you're not just making, you know, more junk to put on the internet. It's a carefully crafted creation. And also going back to the evolution of your career, to me, I feel like, you know, your breakthrough, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like a lot of your breakthrough as a copywriter and as a writer did come from the standpoint of, or the editor-in-chief model. I mean, even if you don't consider yourself that, I would say that, you know, you had this distinction in your mind that you were really taking responsibility for the content that you put out, that it wasn't just because, you know, you felt like it. It was a very intentional creation. So is that what... Do you feel that taking that responsibility led to, you know, now you, like you said, you do like to be a writer, you're comfortable as a writer, and you have a career as that now. Did that come from your personal philosophy of how you approached your content?
I've always said, you know, as a copywriter, it helps to know more than just the discipline of being a copywriter. Like, it helps to understand marketing in general. It helps to understand advertising. It helps to understand psychology. It helps to understand business strategy. It helps to understand, you know, distribution and, you know, all the different functions of a business in a society, because you have that larger picture. Because, and I've always felt, you know, that makes you a more valuable writer, because you can say, when people say, like, you know, if you're talking to somebody and they've just hired you to be a copywriter, how much more valuable you are if you then tell, like, well, tell me about your strategy and how you're going to get there. Because that's who I am, though. It's like, really, if I'm going to do something, I love to know why. Like, why are they doing that? Not just because I have a better idea, but because I'm just curious. And I do think that I can tinker with it and make it better. And I'll at least, you know, provide my opinion. So I have this sense that, you know, that view to helping things and just knowing the full picture of things. And, you know, it having that ability then to make, because it also, what it helps you do is, you know, make those associations that are wildly different, but it brings an old, you know, an old meaning dressed up in a new skirt, sort of, you know, so that it's different. And it's like a new way of saying something or a new way of tackling a problem. So having that broad sense of, you know, because I wouldn't necessarily say it as an editor-in-chief. Well, you know, in a lot of ways, because it is a strategy. I'm looking ahead. I'm that visionary. But because I'm looking for what is the big picture and how is this fitting into it, and how do, you know, what I'm doing fit into the larger picture, because I want to know those things. And because I think it's just a better approach. And it's, you know, I mean, it's like if you're going to go out to a ball on Saturday, you know, you have to wear a dress, but it really helps to know what kind of dress and what kind of people are going to be there and who's, you know, what time of night it is and what is it for. And so it's all these questions that you have to answer in order just to show up in a dress, and you're just missing, you know, half of the equation.
I love that. Oh my gosh, I've never heard that or thought of that before. But no, that is a really great comparison. And it kind of goes back to what you were talking about with the young man that you are mentoring. Like, you need, mm-hmm. It's great if you can produce a lot of stuff and you have a lot of different interests and you're, you know, you're doing multiple websites, but what is that leading towards? I mean, that is great to get you off the ground, but right. It's not sustainable. And what we found out in our cost of doing business online report that we did mm-hmm. last month is people are having trouble making a living online. They want to. It is this growing interest that people have of making a living online and working right. online, but they're struggling to do that. So, you know, like we said, you just got to get started and you got to get off the ground. It's great if you have a lot of different ideas, but you can't go too far without, you know, I feel like it's a constant reevaluation of your strategy, even after every new piece of content that you put out. It is helpful, even if you don't change it right away because you don't really see what you're going to do. Right. It's these just little internal audits of yourself, and you really... this is the editor in me carefully reviewing. When I first started writing on my website, you know, that was kind of how I got started. I had 10,000 different ideas, and I, like yeah. you mentioned about Chris Brogan, I have articles in the beginning where I'm like, why did I write about that? Or like, what, you know, but like you have to. If something happens to yeah. a line in the grocery store this week and you just started writing on your blog regularly, you're going to want to talk about what happened in line at the grocery store.
Sure.
And also if you can incorporate that story into an actual lesson for the audience that you want to reach, I mean, that is kind of the ideal mode, but.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's, you know, a great writer, great editor, you know, is self-aware and is also very observant. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference between sort of a professional and amateur. Like, the amateur observes and just writes. The mm-hmm. you know, the professional observes and thinks, how can I communicate this in a way to my audience that would bring value and be useful to them?
Oh, that is such a great distinction. That is really what I'm getting at with my editor-in-chief model. It is not, you know, you are... Oh, I actually said in a previous episode, you maintain a severe awareness and then mm-hmm. you weave the story. It's not just spitting out the story. It's calculated. That's right. You have a calculated right. intent, purpose for what you're doing with all these observations. And I was actually, because you were talking, you talked to Bernadette Jiwa on The Lead recently mm-hmm. too. And I'll put all these links in the show notes because for the other articles and stuff that I was talking about earlier. And you were talking about, you said a quote from Flannery O'Connor, is that right?
Did mm-hmm. I mess that up? Right. Yeah.
Now I will enunciate because that was my train of thought, but Flannery O'Connor of, if you can live, I'm going to mess it up. Do you know it off the top of your head?
She essentially said, if you live to be 21 to your early 20s, you have a lifetime of material to write about.
And that is, such a interesting idea for that raw concept, but then taking it to the next level of,
right.
you know, you're not just mindlessly writing. If you want to make a living online through your content, you know, maintaining that really clear focus. There was something, that I wanted to talk to you about in that sure. interview too, because you might have to refresh my memory again of what, of where I'm going with this, but you were talking about where you didn't really, now that you work for Copyblogger, you know, you don't think of yourself as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I heard, this all happened at the same time. I heard a word for the first time that I don't think I had ever heard before, and I don't think I had thought about it before, but I came across it right around the time that I listened to that interview. So the word is intrapreneur. Have you
heard intrapreneur? That? Yeah, right, right.
I'd never heard it before.
So just, right, it's someone, entrepreneur who focuses on the internet? Is that the essence of it?
No. Well, not. What is it? Well, maybe it is. I mean, maybe that's a different version.
Okay.
And even when I looked it up, I couldn't find that much about it. So it made me feel a little bit better because I thought I was like completely out of the loop and this was a really old term. Actually, when I looked it up, it said it was a pretty new term. But I couldn't find the exact definition mm-hmm. that I originally came across when I looked it up, because I looked it up on dictionary.com and on Merriam-Webster.com, and I didn't really like those definitions as much as like that first definition that I found, and I couldn't.
So where did you hear? Where was the first time you heard it?
Well, okay, I have a screensaver of words.
Okay.
They flow across my screen, and then one of them stops, and it says the definition, or it pulls up the definition. So it pulled it from my computer's dictionary or something.
Oh, wow.
But I feel like it's always reading my mind because whatever I'm working on or thinking, like, it pulls up words that are related, and I'm shocked by it. And then so I was thinking, is it pulling it from my Google searches? Like, where is it getting this body of words? But sometimes it pulls up things, and I didn't search for anything even remotely related to that. It's just kind of like an internal idea I was working on, or working on with like a notebook. So that's where I first heard it. I was just like, are you kidding me? Because I just listened to your, I don't know, it maybe computers are, you never, yeah, I don't know.
Right.
But so going back to the meaning, so that's where I heard it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to look it up on Merriam-Webster. I'm going to find the same exact definition. And it was different.
Oh,
but
interesting.
Then I found, this is kind of tying things together, I found an article on TechCrunch that's called The Plight of the Intrapreneur, or How to Be an Innovator from Within.
Okay.
Which I will put in the show notes too.
Okay, so let me see if I can guess what they're after. So they're sort of like the entrepreneur within an organization, like a company?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the idea?
That is the idea. It's, okay. I think my own definition that paraphrases the first one I saw is a self-directive, creative person within a company who knows the company's goals really well and uses their own innovation skills to develop an existing company rather than starting their own from scratch the way an entrepreneur would, right?
Right. Yes. Well, I think that, you know, like that's copybloggers full of those people because, I mean, if you look at everybody, you know, on our payroll, Chris Garrett, you know, Sonia Simone, Jared, you, me, you know, Mike Hale, those people, like they either owned their own business or were freelancers in some sense, you know, some sense. Lauren, you know, Minky, designer, Rafal, Tamal, you know, all of those were, you know, freelancers in some sense. So they have that. They have no problem, you know, staying on top of a project and getting things done. They're self-disciplined, lots of just really healthy habits and character traits in them, you know. So, and that's why we can function, you know, the way we do and sort of have the kind of profitability that we do with such a small team of people, because, you know, we do the work of three or four of them, because, and we don't have to be told what to do. And we're always, again, like it goes back to the thing, like, you know, I want to give my opinion. I want to know the why of something because I want to help. And I think that, like, you know, I can change. It may just be to a degree, but I think I can change the direction and course of the company in a good way.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people wonder, and I remember I was on an authority Q&A with Sonia a couple months ago, and we were talking about, I think someone asked, how do you actually form a virtual company? Like, how can that happen? And not just happen, be extremely successful and productive. And I, you know, communication obviously is really important, constant communication. But if I'd known the term at the time, I would have said, you know, you hire a bunch of intrapreneurs because we all don't need to be told what to do. Everything flows very naturally because we all take responsibility for our work. No one wants to be the weakest link. No one wants to leave anyone hanging. We all kind of know how to We know what our jobs are, and we're right. happy to do them. We're not, you know, it's not a thing where we constantly have to be reminded. And there's, you know, with the constant communication, we do check in on each other, but it's right. not in a, you know, micromanaging way.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I really like that. And I was even thinking, because we have another podcast that we are doing together with Jared as well. I don't know. Can I announce it? I don't know.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, this is going to happen. We're doing it. So the main title is Unemployable, and it's us talking about our different, work from home experiences and what it is really like to have a completely, you know, self-directed job for the most part. Right. And I don't know if that's exactly the right description there, but I was thinking maybe we could use intrapreneur in the sub description or something.
Yeah.
The journey of three entrepreneurs.
Exactly.
And going back to your interview with Bernadette, was you were both talking about that. Oh, no, it's coming back to me as I am talking. The idea that you can start where you are. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be, oh, that's what you were talking about. You were talking about the, you know, you don't have to have an audience of 100,000. You can have right. an audience of 100 and do meaningful work. You can have an audience of 10 and do meaningful work.
Right.
And so you don't necessarily have to feel like if you're not an entrepreneur and started your very own thing from scratch without anything to, you know, make a change and to do meaningful work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, you even if you do work for a company,
mm-hmm.
that maybe you don't have that much creative control. I mean, you can assume that editor-in-chief mindset if you're an employee at a company and just do your
That's
job,
right.
you know, in a completely superior way, even if you don't have a lot of creative freedom. But and that pushes you forward, just really assuming that responsibility helps establish great relationships. And then if you do want to do your own thing down the line, or if that's really your goal, if you work for a bigger company, but your goal is to have your own digital media platform where you produce content and it's a, you know, a completely kind of self-employed career and you make a living doing that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is a big leap to go from A to Z, from working at a company and then, you know, doing that on your own. But you can start where you are.
Yeah, that fascinates me. I mean, you fascinate me because, you know, when I heard that we were, you know, you were coming on board, that we were getting, I thought we were getting a proofreader. And I thought, like, we desperately need this, right, to begin with, because it was me, Jared, and Sonia. And again, like I said, I'm not, there's a reason why I'm not a proofreader, and I don't focus on that. And so we were, you know, it was in our court to sort of do the, you know, Jared's and my court to do the, you know, sort of like major proofreading. And then Sonia just kind of come through and do the approval. But, you know, we were missing things because it just, you know, we had other things to do. And then neither of us were just had that kind of ferocious, you know, examination of the copy. But so I'm like, yeah, we desperately need that. That's great. But then you've just assumed a much larger role in that sense of like being the editor in chief. And I remember we were talking about that because Jared's original title was it manager of editorial standards. And we just said, okay, that's not it. It's larger than that. It is this editor in chief because you know you're thinking you manage the calendar and you do such a good job of managing the calendar. I know we give you a hard time about that, but you know you do great because so this is what's wonderful about that and this relationship, you know, having this relationship with you is it's like I don't have to worry about those things. You know, I can annoy you with emails saying, hey, when's my next blog post? And you could probably tell me off the top of your head, you know, having to be able to do it. So I can sort of focus on what I do, you know, really well, and allows you to do that really well.
Well, thank you.
You bet.
Oh, yeah. No, it is really great. Working with you. So were you, because maybe, okay, I don't want to ask a leading question, but mm-hmm. So you were on board when Jared said, hey, we're going to hire someone else to join.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I had been asking like, you know, I think we need to, cause there were a number of times where we'd publish something and we'd get an email from Brian saying, you know, alter, it's A-L-T-E, you meant A-L-T-E-R, not A-L-T-A-R. And we're like, yeah, that was pretty bad. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, I was championing. I think we were all kind of championing for that to happen. So, because we knew it. It's just like, we need somebody who says, okay, this is my job and this is what I focus on. Because Jared at that time, he was doing a lot of publishing the calendar, managing a lot of emails and other things too. So it was a very healthy thing to do. And we were all on board for that.
Thank you. Well, I maybe misinterpreted it because I was thinking that you might have had a little apprehension towards it going, who is this editor who's going to come in and mess up my writing?
Yes. So, I mean, there is, you know, that apprehension, but it was slight. And I knew that, like, I had been publishing for Copyblogger by 2 years at that point. So it's like, I don't think they're going to hire somebody who comes in and says, you know, okay, you know, you need to change this. This needs to go and cause problems. But you didn't do that. I knew that ultimately, and so I tried to give you at the same time, you know, it's like, I want to honor your discipline because I know you're coming in and I don't want to be that sort of fussy writer who like kicks back on everything that is done. Because sometimes, you know, I mean, there was an opening that I absolutely loved and I wanted it to be there, but that it was changed. And I was like, no, I need that opening to be that opening. And so I went back and changed it. But for the most part, it's like, I looked there, okay, you know, I may not have done it that way. But what I think though is like, okay, so they're seeing something and viewing something differently than I am. So I'm going to trust them that that's better than what I had. And so that's kind of how I view the relationship.
Yeah, there has to be some trust there. That's funny because, no, I really understand that. I think that's why I almost assume that any writer would be a little nervous about, you know, a new editor looking at their work. Because when I have my editor hat on, you know, I'm like, no, we need to cut this. We need to change this opening. I'm very deliberate about, you know, of how to get a piece that I feel is published ready. But then when I'm a writer and someone changes my writing, then I become this big drama queen where, no, it was perfect. I spent all this time carefully picking those words and you destroyed it. You know, so I understand, but, you know, and then I go back to being an editor and
I view that relationship, like I said, I view that relationship because I know at some point that I'm the only one looking at this. And so I need somebody else to look at it and tell me. And that's why a lot of times when I send this off to you and Jared, I'm just like, so tell me if this is making sense, because I've rewritten this like 22 times and I think this is what I'm trying to do. This is what I'm trying to do. Did I do that? You know, because having a fresh pair of eyes, because, you know, I try to start my blog post as soon as I know that I have a deadline, right? And then so it gives me time to write it, then look at it, write it, leave it alone for a couple of days, come back to it and write it. But even that, I know that I need somebody else to look at it and say, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. You know, the post that went up yesterday after when I turned it in, Jared's like, okay, you know, think about this, 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 and this, and which is just enormously helpful, right? Because it's like a relation, it's a healthy relationship to have someone else and someone else with like an editor. So, okay, this is what I like, but this is what I don't like. This is how it can be better, because that's ultimately what we're after, right? You know, this is about, you know, giving the audience a better product. And so I oftentimes like, okay, that's not how I would have done it. That's not the way I gave it to you. However, I'm going to trust you that you're saying something that I don't see. I'm being honest with you.
I go through the same thing where sometimes, you know, I ask you for help, I ask Jared for help, because if I'm doing something, you're just so close to it. And the benefit of working with the editor is seeing how other people are going to view your work and not just you before it is actually published. It's like the safety net before something actually gets published. And we've been talking about Sally Hogshead's assassination assessment test that we all took, and it's how the world sees you,
right?
Which is a really interesting concept, and she's going to be talking at Authority Rainmaker this May. I'm very, very interested in hearing more about that. But because how the world sees you is that same perspective that editor has when, you know, she is reviewing your writing. You know, it's how the world sees your writing, not how you know, you're kind of too in your head, or I really feel like, you know, like, I'm not sure if this is being communicated clearly, right. And it kind of has to be cleaned up. So do you have a review process of, say, after we publish something, after I've edited, that you go back and you see, like, you... where you look for the changes that I've made to maybe change your writing in the future?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I always just sort of had this process of, and this is one of the things that I liked about blogging. So like what I've always done, like whether it was my blog, is like publish something on one day, or in this case with Copyblogger, be handed over on one day, and then to actually see it come live the next day. So like, you know, the Copybot, if I, you know, was always in the practice of publishing something on, just say, Monday, but I didn't send the email till the next day because I wanted to be able to sort of be caught by surprise by it, like in my email inbox, and then read it sort of like a fresh eyes so I can then review it. And the same thing like with Copyblogger is that when I publish something, it's come through you guys and then it's actually, you know, live. I'll then read through it, like, one, just because I want to see what I would do differently just having written it, but also to see, okay, what changed and how did they change and try to think through why they changed it so I can adjust. Like the headline, you know, like the word winning, right? Mm-hmm. Brian Clark, I think, changed one of my headlines to winning, and he did it to something else. And I was like, okay, clearly that's something that I need to do, you know, down the road. And it worked out with one of the last ones that I did. But that process of like reviewing everything that I've published that is out there, like the day after, something like that, is actually, I think it was from one of the most successful, I got that idea from one of the most successful soap opera film producer guys, that he would do like because it's, you know, soap opera is a daily show, and so he would film the day, the next day he would review it, you know, just like with fresh shots, like, what would I do, and try to make notes and think about how, because it's always that sort of pushing for, you know, this is, writing is my art. I look at it as art, even though it's a article about, you know, content strategy, or it's an article about, you know, kind of pruning and cleaning up expired content. I look at that as like, how can I improve this? How can I get better? What would I do next time to make it better? Always just sort of striving to improve the craft and looking at it in a different, you know, how can I make this, how can I get better at this?
Mm-hmm. And it's okay, even if it is published, you know, it's not like, okay, the show's over just because a piece of,
yeah, I really think that's, yeah, I think that's lazy kind of, it's irresponsible, I should say. I think it's irresponsible to say, okay, I've done it and gotten it. And trust me, I've done stuff like that before where some people's like, you know, whether they ask me something, I've done it, but it's been on the side. But I really don't do a lot of those because I'm like, I want to care about what I do. And I want to be able to say, you know, yeah, this is what I do. And this is something you can read. You may not be interested in it, but you'll be able to read it, and you'll be able, you know, be engaging, and it'll be readable, and it'll be fun reading.
And it comes from that, you know, severe awareness and review place also.
Exactly.
That pushes you forward, constantly evaluating your work. Just not, lazy, I think, is a, you know, it's a strong word, but it also, I mean, it's beneficial to you and your goals. You know, you're not going, if you publish and then you aren't, you know, severely aware of what you could have been doing better or what you want to do differently, you're not going to move forward as much to a place where you could maybe make a living doing this if you are struggling to make a living through, you know, the content you produce right now. And, you know, and sometimes there are changes that are helpful, and sometimes you're just like, okay, that was changed. It's not going to. But I mean, the winning or picking up on words like, you know, that you should use differently. I like text-compare.com where, you know, it highlights the differences between two versions of text.
Okay.
It's kind of an editor trick if someone gives you changes to something you're already working on and you don't know where they are if they're not highlighted. How am I ever going to find what changes you made? I do not recommend that. I actually, in my business, I had a disclaimer about you had to submit your final version to me. Otherwise, there was a financial penalty.
Okay.
If you
tough.
I was tough. Because, I mean, it is, once you started editing things and then you get a new version, it's just, you need to be, you know, compensated for that time that you spent. So,
but if
it does happen, I mean, you pick up tricks for how to, you know, recover if that does happen. And yeah,
sure.
So, but it is also helpful with reviewing your work after someone else edited it, because there are going to be times where you're like, okay, well, that change didn't mean anything to me. Or there'll be other times where like, oh, I used the passive voice 5 times. And maybe if I don't do that in the future, the piece will have a little more punch to it in that active voice.
Right.
So yes, and you said writing is your art. Editing is my art, really. I love working with writers, and it's such a pleasure to work with you. Even if you do like editing, I think all editors know that there are preferable circumstances, like any job, and there are other, you know, less preferable circumstances to work in. So it's
right.
Really, yeah. So it's really great working with you, and that I get to really execute my
change
art.
My stuff.
Change your stuff. Yeah. Change your stuff.
So when you say art, like in a what way, how is it an art? Cause like, I mean, I look at as a writer, I think I could clearly say that a writer art, because he shapes, you know, like a sculptor, like shapes the marble. What is the appropriate metaphor for the editor?
Well, I think it is similar. I really like reviewing writing and seeing what an editor meant, or what a writer meant to say. I love extracting what the true meaning was and then making that more clear.
Oh,
to
great.
Me, that is just very artistic, where if I read a paragraph and I'm staring at it, I'm like, I know what they're trying to say, but I just, you know, if another reader comes along, it's going to trip them up. My goal is to have a reader just effortlessly go through text like it was the easiest thing in the world and not have to think, what were they trying to say there? Or that's a little convoluted. If you lose the reader for a second, especially with online content, you know, they're clicking off on other things. So my goal, and why I do consider it artistic, is my goal is to just make this completely easy thing to read, no matter what it looked like when I get a draft. That is really, I mean, it is that sculpting. I think it's
like the final polish. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a creation for me. Even though they aren't my original thoughts or my original words, I take such ownership of it.
That's great. So having said that, so what do you do with the fussy writers who are like, you know, I don't need it sculpted anymore. I don't need you shaping it.
That's a really good question. It depends. I mean, if I'm working with someone, they know that they need.
That's your job.
That's my job. But there are people that don't, you know, don't want that feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned to have to let things go. You know, there is a certain way that, which is hard for a control freak, but you know, at some point there, you just, you know, you learn. I think it's also artistic for me because every new piece of writing is a completely new project. There's no mechanical process that I do. I have to approach, I mean, there are certain things that I check for. There are tricks to make that I do to make sure that everything's in place. And, you know, I have a checklist of things that I need to look at. But every new piece of writing is a new project, the degree of how much I'm editing. And so sometimes there are those, you know, if for some reason it is a situation where the writer is very particular about, you know, about the text, you know, I don't overdo it. I've learned to let it go and say, you know, this isn't how I would do it, but I'm not going to overstep, because I think writers' biggest, a big fear that writers have with working with editors is that that editor is just going to completely change their intention.
Right.
And the editor really has to bring out the best in the writer and not you know, overstep and over manipulate, because you definitely can. And editors like doing that. I definitely, I've learned a lot about, you know, you want to keep that voice. You don't want to rewrite it the way that I would, write something.
So in that sense, it is an art, because it's like, how do you polish it, but at the same time polish it so it doesn't lose like the shine of the original voice, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's a balance, like everything. I love this balance theme that I keep talking about with the long term and the short term, and then getting really, you know, micro into an actual piece of writing. You're balancing making this very clear for a reader and maintaining the writer's original voice and intentions and just making it, you know, the best that it could be.
Yeah. So I know what writers dream about. Like, what do editors dream about?
I think
in your dreams, like when you're sleeping, mm-hmm. what do editors dream about?
I actually wake up with ideas of how to make things work for what I'm working on. Because say I'm looking at a piece of writing and I know I need to edit it the next day. Okay. And it needs a lot of work. Because right now the draft is just not publishable, let's say.
Right.
And I'll go to sleep with how the draft looks in my head. And I will wake up with these breakthroughs of, oh my gosh, I know how to fix that. I know what I need to cut. I know what I need to rearrange to make it a cohesive piece. Or so I don't know. I love sleeping for that. Sleeping is so beneficial for me. I think it's for my editing. It really benefits my editing because if I'm just staring at something, like I said, the day before, I'm like, what, how am I going to make this work? And right. then I have these just light bulb moments of that's what I need to do and it's going to be great. And then I really value the writer's original intentions because I get to bring that out where what right. I originally looked at didn't have that. That's beneficial for the writer. Not that, I do everything, but I want the writer's original ideas to really shine and not be bogged down with, oh, they really, they wrote their main point at the end, burying the lead, as we say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, that is good. Damien, thank you so much for talking with me. This has been really fun.
Hey, you bet. Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot. I'm sure we could go on.
We could go on. I know there is more. Well, maybe we could do a follow-up at a different interview later down the line as after we've had more experience with our podcasts have been out there more and we have more to talk about. But I really appreciate it and I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks for the great questions. So, yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you for all the explanations. So we have a meeting later, so I will see you then.
Take care.
Thanks so much. You too.
I am very honored to work with Damien. He's really someone special who has many fascinating experiences as a writer and editor. What about you? Do you consider yourself more of a writer or an editor, or perhaps both? Do you feel you need an editor to review your work, or are you better off writing alone? Let me know in the comment section of this episode's corresponding blog post. And if you would like to rate or review Editor-in-Chief over on iTunes, I would greatly appreciate your feedback. So thank you in advance. I hope you will spend some time with me next week as well. Until then, I'm Stephanie Flaxman. Thank you for listening to Editor-in-Chief. Now, go become one.